Greetings. At the end of February, I was up at CPAC in the Washington Beltway on behalf of the Civitas Institute. I interviewed policy experts and leading figures in the conservative movement for Civitalk. Coming up next, we will air a special CPAC interview from the event. Stay tuned and enjoy.
From the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up, and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Ray Nothstein with Civitalk up here at CPAC 2019 with the Reverend Dean Nelson, the chairman of the Frederick Douglass Foundation. He's real involved in the events going on in Virginia with Governor Northam. We've talked a lot about that on the podcast, his comments, and also infanticide. So, Reverend Nelson, just tell us a little bit about some of the endeavors and action that you've had just to raise awareness on these issues, because sometimes the media doesn't cover it, at least from a fair standpoint. So how do you raise awareness on an issue like that, especially when a lot of people may be tuned in to stuff that is national?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. One of the things that we like to say is that Frederick Douglass was the most photographed person in the 19th century for a reason. And the reason was because he was trying to make the point that black men were not the caricatures of black face during that time period. And so when I saw what was taking place in the Commonwealth of Virginia, I went to UVA. I'm very familiar with, you know, how things have worked over the last, you know, few decades in Virginia. I felt like it was our responsibility as a Frederick Douglass organization to take a stand. And it was also shocking, not just to us, but to all Virginians and really the nation, to also hear the statements of Governor Northam that amounted to infanticide. And so our message when we marched on the mansion last week was no to racism, no to infanticide. Northam must go. And we had, as it was reported, several hundred people that gathered out in the 39 degrees in rain. But because it was something that was important, we made a statement, and the media responded. And we'll see what happens over the next several weeks with regard to Governor Northam.
With Reverend Dean Nelson up here at CPAC 2019, I have a final question for him. I really want to ask, explain to our audience how this is not really a political issue. A lot of times we step into our tribalism today, and we want to defend the governor because we're Democrats, or we want to be against them because we're conservative and Republican. But why is this not really a partisan issue? This is a bigger issue, not just in terms of race, but I think of, you know, the direction we want to go as Americans, as a united country. How is this not really a partisan issue? We shouldn't think about that in that way, right?
Man, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because at the March on the Mansion, it was right, left. So we had liberal professors from Virginia Union University. We had the president of the Family Foundation of Virginia, which is a pro-life, pro-family group. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference president for the state, the national, the NAACP, their leadership, statewide leadership were there. All together, black, white, I mean, Jewish, Catholic, Protestant. You're absolutely right, because when we talk about humanity, there are two things that we were facing. One, there was an issue of dehumanization of, you know, people because of the blackface and that type of thing. But then we also had the comments of it amounted to infanticide. And so what we were saying across political lines, across denominational lines, cultural lines, that we together felt like it was important to say no to racism, no to infanticide.
I'm here with Hayden Williams with the Leadership Institute. He was involved in an attack, an assault, where you can even see, is this a recent black eye from the assault that you had on a campus? UC Berkeley, is that correct?
That's correct. It was last Tuesday that I was invited there by some students to help them recruit new members. And that's pretty much what the Leadership Institute does. They train and help young conservative students organize and host events. So on this day, some students at Berkeley had planned to demonstrate in protest against the Jussie Smollett hoax. And so some of the signs we had said, hate crime hoaxes hurt real victims, and this is MAGA country, you know, because that's one of the lies that Jussie Smollett told pretty much indicted all Trump supporters, and we just wanted to demonstrate, you know, that that's not what we stand for. And towards the end of the day there, too, you know, we had received some, we always receive some harassment at Berkeley. When I've been there a couple of times in the past, and but never this extreme. Towards the end of the day, two people approached our table and said we were promoting violence and were yelling at us and cussing. And right at that moment, I pulled out my phone and started to record because I was concerned for the student's safety and my own. And right then, that did not de-escalate the situation. In fact, it got worse. And next thing I know, I'm getting wailed on by this guy that's like 100 pounds bigger than me.
Why do you think we've gotten to this area of our country and the culture where the speech, the attacks on free speech has gotten so bad? I mean, this is a little bit different question, but the culture has kind of moved against this issue on college campuses. I mean, you know, the average person out there, especially when they look at a public university, they go, wow, why is there so many problems with free speech on campus? I mean, what is the deeper issue here? Do you think there's so much pushback where someone sees an opinion that they don't agree with and it causes them to lash out in violence?
Well, I think academia is a big culprit in that and sort of promoting this kind of culture of hostility against conservatives or really just anyone who believes in the Constitution's or the Constitution and the values enshrined in it. But also the media is to blame because look at this Jussie Smollett hoax. It pretty much fanned the flames of hysteria in people across the country, and it was all based on a lie.
Final question for Mr. Williams here at CPAC. I was wondering, what can a student do if they felt like their free speech is being violated? Maybe they're not connected to conservative groups on campus or national conservative groups. What can they do if they feel like their free speech has been violated, they're being oppressed on campus? Who are some people they can reach out to?
Yeah, first and foremost, I'd say check out leadershipinstitute.org and campusreform.org. We're connected with many organizations such as FIRE and Alliance Defending Freedom that I have lawyers retained just for this sort of these sorts of cases. So, and furthermore, document everything. Get it in writing. You know, if somebody tells you you can't set up, ask them why. Ask them what policy you're violating, and what's going to happen if you don't you know, listen to what they tell you.
That's Hayden Williams, who was a victim of an assault at UC Berkeley. He's helping to raise the awareness of the free speech crisis on campuses across the country. Thank you, Hayden.
Thank you for having me.
Ray Notestein for CivitTalk here with Tim Chapman, Executive Director of Heritage Action. We're going to talk about spending in the debt. One of the problems that we have with spending in the debt is lawmakers don't pay attention. Do you think that's more of a problem with lawmakers not caring, or is the culture swaying this in some degree because of record credit card debt, student loan debt? I mean, is there any path out of this that's political?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks, Ray. When I look at this, I think the biggest problem we have on this specific issue is the fact that there's not popular, consent on the issue. There's not a majority in this country who are willing to go to the mat on the specific issue. Now, look, when you look at different polling, will people say federal spending is an issue? Yeah, they will. Will they say that they don't like the huge size and scope of government? Yes, they will. But then when you take the next step and say, well, are you willing to cut Social Security? Are you willing to cut Medicare? And you weigh these things out, it gets really, really dicey. And so I think the major problem, I mean, we've got a two-headed problem here. One is that politicians don't want to lead, but two is that people aren't pushing them to lead. And so we need to find a way to build a consensus across this country. And what we talked about today here at CPAC on the panel with Senator Perdue is that, you know, we failed to make the case. You got to make the case about what the actual existential threat is. I think if people really felt like they understood what the existential threat to the country is and how it could impact their own bottom lines, then we'd be in a better position. But the conservative movement has to do a better job talking about it.
I'm almost 40 years old. And I remember the 80s. I mean, debt was a huge crisis. I mean, everybody talked about it. We had just gone past $1 trillion back then. And it seems like nobody talks about it. I know you've addressed this a little bit, but what is the number one takeaway just in terms of a raising awareness in the political and cultural perspective? How do we just raise awareness publicly?
Well, I think we've got to do a better job right now of highlighting what could happen. Look, we saw, you look in the rearview mirror and look at some of the debt crisis we saw in Europe. I think we needed to do a better job of saying that could very well be us. The dollar could cease to be the currency of the world. You know, we could lose that status if our GDP to debt ratio gets so out of control. And what happens when that happens? What happens to our own economy? What happens to Americans' pocketbooks? So for us, I think we've got to highlight the issues. And then we've also got an opportunity because the left right now is dead set on driving the debt up.
We are going to talk with Emma Michelle about campus free speech issues, a growing concern across the country, certainly one we've heard a lot about in North Carolina. First of all, Emma, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
One of the things I think we hear a lot of times about free speech is people, you know, whether they're reading the newspaper, they hear about censorship on campus, especially at a public university, obviously, people go, wait, how can that happen? This is America. I mean, this is a growing concern. So what are just the average person out there, what do they need to know that could be alarming or things that are kind of picking up in the news that would be concerning to them, that things that are happening on college campuses really all across the country?
Well, really, college campuses, what they're doing to erode free speech is they're chipping it away one little bit at a time. So it starts in the classroom saying, you know, you can't discuss this topic that's controversial. You can't host this speaker on campus because they're too controversial. And what that leads to is an overall attitude that speech is violent and that saying something that you disagree with to a person is actually the same thing as physical violence. And what's ironic about that is that just this last week we saw at Cal Berkeley, one of our own people at the Leadership Institute, Hayden Williams, he was out exercising his right to free speech and recruiting conservative students for his cause, and he was punched in the face by someone who said, "You're inciting violence." And this is basically the left's idea that it's free speech for me but not thee. And it's really unfortunate to see, and that's why we do what we do. We're hoping to shine a light on these issues and expose them, bring accountability, because ultimately people aren't going to know about these stories unless we write about them. And we're trying to bring accountability and bring coverage to these issues so that people can make informed decisions when they're choosing what school they want to go to. It's pretty ironic. Berkeley's supposed to be the home of free speech, and it's actually one of the worst when it comes to that. So it's important that we're paying attention to these things so that it doesn't continue to grow as a trend beyond the college campus.
Emma, this is maybe a little bit different question than you're used to, but how did we get to this point, you think, from a standpoint of our culture, where free speech is actually under attack in this country, and particularly on college campuses, and a lot of students maybe, they're not even educated on this issue?
No, well, really what's interesting is the counterculture back in the 60s and 70s, they were all about free speech and they were all about, you know, the right to protest. But it's actually changed so much to where conservative students are now considered the counterculture. Because if you're a conservative student on the college campus, you are in the minority. There are going to be way more liberals surrounding you, and you're the one with the controversial views. That's not how it used to be, but it's actually shifted to that direction. And really what we've seen here is a cultural shift that says saying something that I disagree with is the same thing as committing violence against me. And that's not what our founders thought when they wrote the First Amendment. It's not what they thought when they wrote our country, where freedom to say what you want and to do what you believe is one of the most important things about this nation. And I think that they would be disappointed to see where the culture has shifted today.
One final question. If a student has their free speech violated, they're concerned, and maybe they don't know where to turn to, they hadn't heard of these organizations that are out there for help, where's some places they can turn to get help? Who can they contact?
Well, the first one I'd recommend is my workplace, campusreform.org. We actually have a correspondence program where we have college students write stories about what's going on campuses, because they are far more equipped to write those than we are, because they're actually living these stories. So they see the things that we could never see in our newsroom. So that's why we empower them to be the journalist, them to be the voice. So if you're a student and you're listening to this and you're thinking, hey, I've thought of a couple things on my campus that would definitely fit the bill here, go to campusreform.org and apply to be a correspondent. I actually run that program. I'm very proud of our students and the work they do, and they go on to do amazing things. Don't be quiet. Speak up for what you believe in, and you know you have a right to do that. So make sure that you're exercising that right.
That's Emma Michelle. She's really helping to raise the awareness of free speech issues across the country, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We have a now declared candidate for North Carolina Congressional District 3, Jeff Moore with us today. We're going to talk federal spending, federal issues, and just get his opinion on some of the things that are going on in Washington. So, Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
One of the big concerns from a lot of our listeners is the federal debt and federal spending. They don't see any end in sight. Politicians continue to spend. I think one of the problems is a cultural problem, is a lot of people are in student loan debt or they're in credit card debt, and so maybe they don't feel like they can put pressure on politicians. What needs to happen in Congress for things to change?
Well, the Congress, for the most part, actually needs to grow a spine with respect to actually cutting spending. It's been virtually my whole life that spending has been outpacing revenues in the federal government. And even when they had kind of accounting surpluses in the 90s and the Clinton era, they found ways to spend that money as well. And so you've seen what has happened in the subsequent couple of decades. But on the margins, there are things that are going to be lower hanging fruit that they can actually go after to reduce spending in meaningful ways. But I think everybody is aware of the elephant in the room when it comes to spending, that these entitlement programs are actually what's the biggest drain on the federal government going forward with Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. So they're going to have meaningful reforms there that actually protect the commitments that are made to the citizens of the country that are in those programs, but actually make them viable for the future, especially for younger generations who see their FICA taxes and payroll taxes taken out of that paycheck and have no real hope that they're actually going to see that money later on. So there has to be an honest conversation about the entitlement programs, but I think that they can get momentum to actually approach the issue by cutting in other areas that are easier to affect, although more marginal in their end result. And some of those areas can be like in Afghanistan, where we're still spending about $50 billion a year for Afghanistan, and that war is going nowhere. The mission creep has actually exceeded what our original goals were there, and that would be a good area to actually bring our men and women back home and put $50 billion towards debt service and paying down some other things or some other priority programs so we can offset some spending down the road. So we've got to have a real hard look, and this guy has to take a hard spine to actually approach it, because we've seen over the last however many years that there's not a whole lot of willingness to actually cut. When they advertise spending cuts, usually it's cuts and spending growth. It's not honest to goodness spending cut. So we need candidates and congressmen and women up there that are actually prepared to make those cuts, even though they'll be paying in this area or that, especially in those areas where the government should not be operating in the first place.
What are three big issues? Walter Jones is obviously a monumental figure in the Eastern District of North Carolina, but what are three big issues that you can not only continue that legacy, but maybe expand on some of the things that he really talked about? Some of that has to do with foreign policy, obviously, and overextending ourselves overseas. But what do you kind of see as three big issues that you could get to work on right away, or someone in that district needs to get to work on right away in Washington?
Yeah, I think, with the 3rd District of North Carolina and nationally speaking, illegal immigration has got to be a hot-button issue that we actually approach, because it's one of those things we can actually achieve some results on in pretty quick fashion. Some of the other issues are much longer term, so immigration has to be tackled. The border needs to be secured as soon as possible. We actually have the funding to have that security robust and make sure that the sovereignty of our nation and therefore the sovereignty of the individuals therein is actually protected, that we have our rights secured because we actually know who is coming in and going out of our country in an orderly way. So we've got to have that issue handled. But also, with respect to some of these foreign engagements, we mentioned Afghanistan earlier. We have limited involvement in Syria, and there always seems to be hotspots around the world where people in Washington, D.C. are inclined to stick their fingers in those conflicts as much as they can. I think we need a really serious look at what justifies American military involvement, with a first priority on the respect for the lives and sacrifice of our men and women in the armed services, because we can't be sending them into foreign entanglements from here across the world for things that are only loosely correlated with our national interests, not to mention our national security. So I think that's an area that we need to focus on. And then what we just talked about before, the spending and actually domestic fiscal policies in this country, I think are an area that we need to continue to focus on. And there's a lot of there's a lack of focus on those areas in any real meaningful way, and that's something that the late Walter B. Jones, Congressman Jones, really focused on as far as being a deficit hawk and a debt hawk. We have to get that under control because it's at this point, it's so monumental of a debt figure now that even with sequential years of really strong growth and paying that down, assuming that Congress would pay it down, it's going to take forever to actually get out of that. So we need to have a real hard focus, concerted focus on that federal spending and fiscal side, and continue that legacy of Congressman Jones so we can actually protect the property rights of our children and grandchildren down the line. And now, actually, these days, it's looking like great-grandchildren that may be on the hook for a lot of these debts.
One of the things, some conservatives, not all, but some conservatives are worried about career politicians, worried about just people who spend their whole time in public service. Maybe they spend their whole time in Washington, they spend their whole time in Raleigh. Is term limits something you're open to? Is that something you're interested in? Would that be something that you would vote for if it came to a floor vote on the House? I mean, what are some ways that we can discourage people from maybe spending their whole time in politics?
Yeah, I think term limits is definitely something that I would support. There was never an intention by our founding fathers to have such an industry of government as we have on the political side of things. So you do have people that spend their entire professional lives in some sort of public service in which they're lording over constituents of this district or that. And so I would definitely support term limits. I think that there's probably reasonable approaches to the House and the Senate because of the different length of their terms to say how many terms they can be in there. If I were to make it to Congress, I would definitely support and vote for legislation that would establish term limits, because while there are a lot of people in this country that have something to offer, and the incumbency advantage in Congress and even on Jones Street and Raleigh is so strong that it makes the whole institution static, and it leads to a lot of the problems that you get that we were just talking about with some of these spending practices and the self-ingratiating habits of these congressmen and women. That's not conducive to an actual liberty-minded and free society that respects our individual rights. It lends itself to more corruption, more patting each other on the back, and a lot more horse trading, and that's definitely something we don't need more of in Washington, D.C.
I'm up here at CPAC 2019 with Jeff Moore from North Carolina, a candidate for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District of North Carolina. I have a final question for him, and I think this is probably something a lot of our listeners would like to hear. What is the biggest takeaway from Walter Jones that you or any candidate really should model themselves after? What lessons do you draw from Walter Jones that would shape your service in public life?
One word to describe Walter Jones would be integrity. I was at his funeral service a couple of weeks ago, and it was the central theme, the thread that tied every eulogy together and every account of Congressman Jones featured his amazing amount of integrity. He was dedicated to his principles and to his faith. He had a mind of his own, and so he was upsetting people on both sides of the aisle often enough throughout his career. But that was emanating from a place of loyalty to that integrity and having the integrity of character and being loyal to those principles. So I think that's something that is missing in Washington for the most part. The candidates and politicians that are really, really loyal to first principles and willing to go against the grain to actually uphold those are fewer and farther between. We need a lot more like Congressman Jones up in Washington, D.C., and I hope to be able to bring that level of integrity to the office for the 3rd District of North Carolina.